The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Monday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Now that all of the traveling and negotiations are over, we can finally tell you where Peyton's Place is going to be. Do the odds makers have the right Marshall plan heading to the Sweet 16? And for the best of the Monday board, we're going to tell you why one team should absolutely floor their opponent.
So, Dave, obviously, insane weekend of NCAA tournament action, lots to talk about, but let's start with the first take. What did you see this weekend that struck your eye and maybe struck a chord with you that you want to share with our audience today?
We'll talk about a chord that might have struck a lot of you. So we'll see if we have common experiences watching basketball. First, of course, we start with the fact that our bracket, all the teams left, could now fit on a matchbook cover. That's not terribly good. But when you sit and watch basketball for a few days, which I assume a lot of you probably did, let's see if we've got a common theme here. I'm among the least violent people I know. I got a BB gun for my birthday when I was 10 years old, went out, shot a bird, saw it laying there in the yard, and that was it. Could never do anything violent the rest of my life. Now I've been watching basketball around the clock for 4 days. And if you're like me, those two annoying couples in the Chevy Malibu singing along to Spandau Ballet.
Thank you.
Now, if I'm going to have to watch that from now until they cut the nets down at the end of this tournament, something very dark just might happen. I hope you've got something more positive.
No, that's Spandau Ballet. And the funny thing is, I don't even know what car it's for. I couldn't even tell you what brand it's for.
It's a Chevy Malibu. Mm-hmm. Don't buy one. And that's the part I think that's the most bothersome. You know who's watching the NCAA tournament. You know the demographic, right?
Sure, men.
And you've got these dweeby yuppies singing along to Spandau Ballet. And the guy in the back seat, when he turns around, says, "That's Spandau Ballet, man." You just shoot it right there. You just turn and just bang. That's it. You're dead, pal.
Malibu was my first car, too. That was
we had a Malibu Classic. It was a great car back then. But no, from now to the end of the tournament, there's a little ticking bomb
going off inside. I understand completely. Negative Q rating on the Chevy Malibu. Yes. But my first take, I mean, for as exciting, and there were some exciting games, you know, no question. We had the closest thing to a buzzer beater was Wisconsin's Taylor when he hit the big three-pointer to beat Vanderbilt. Of course, that cost me a big ticket bet, so I wasn't really excited about that.
Why are we talking about that?
Maybe Kansas, maybe, you know, with the steal and the alley-oop at the end of the game. That was probably an exciting finish. But by and large, no buzzer beaters for the entire first weekend, no wild comebacks for the entire first weekend, no overtime games for the entire first weekend. All the mid-majors that we love to cheer for, what do we got left? Ohio and Xavier, you know. So for as exciting as the first weekend is supposed to be, frankly, I thought this first weekend was a little bit of a dud. And I know I came in on Friday, was like, how much fun was Thursday? The rest of the weekend, you know, I mean, we had that one string of upsets on Friday night when Missouri went down and then Duke went down and Michigan went down. That was it. Just not a lot of drama on the opening weekend of the Big Dance. Hopefully we'll see a little bit more excitement, maybe put a few more shekels in our pockets this coming weekend, Dave, because you and I, in terms of our POD plays here on the show, you know, it wasn't a good weekend for us.
Not terribly good.
All right, let's set up the week. All right, today we promised we were going to break down all the deals in the NBA at the trading deadline. We're about to do that in postmortem coming up next. Tomorrow we're going to open the mailbag. Tons of great emails that have come in. We haven't had a chance to answer them on air. Tomorrow, we're going to devote lot of time to answering the questions you've been sending in. Wednesday, we're going to break down Thursday's Sweet 16 games. Thursday, we're going to break down Friday's Sweet 16 games. That way, all eight games will be broken down before the first tip-off. So if you want to bet your parlays, you can bet your parlays. Now, we got to talk about, shift over to Market Watch and talk about the impact of the only significant injury of the first two rounds or the first weekend of Big Dance action. Of course, that being North Carolina point guard Kendall Marshall and his fractured right wrist.
Very surprised by the markets this morning. We thought the game would be kept off the board until his status was known better, but it went up, and it's up solid in some good stores. Now, latest update on Marshall, he will have surgery on that wrist, but they still won't say for sure that he's definitely out of the game, which is what Roy Williams is supposed to do. Force your opponent to prepare for a lot of different options. Problem is, Roy doesn't have a lot of different options. Here's what's surprising about that line. You see a 10.5 and a 143 right now. Now, we talk all season about how the markets tend to be anchored to these full-season power ratings by Ken Pomeroy, Jeff Sagarin, and a lot of the mathematicians. When you look at the projections, that's right where the math would project with a healthy Marshall. 10.5, 11. The Pomeroy total would be higher than the 143 that's out there. So we're very surprised that that line is where it is, that it's up in as many places as it's up at, because Kendall Marshall's impact, it's just huge on North Carolina. This guy makes things happen. And the question is, if he's not there, who else can step up and do what Marshall does?
Well, I mean, when you look at the graphic and show the difference between Kendall Marshall handling the basketball and everyone else on that Tar Heel roster, remember, they don't have Dexter Strickland. Got hurt, 39 assists, 26 turnovers early in the season. He's not available. And Marshall's numbers, let's see that graphic real quick because it's pretty impressive. Floor game impact for Kendall Marshall. He has, for the season, 351 assists versus 101 turnovers. That's about a 3.5 assist turnover ratio. Excellent. Really outstanding at any level. Every other current North Carolina player on the roster combined, 183 assists versus 293 turnovers. Yeah, Kendall Marshall doesn't play. It's going to have an enormous impact because no one else on the team has more than 45 assists. He's got 351. North Carolina loaded with NBA caliber talent. And I think this number, based on the fact that betting markets, while Ohio U took money in both their games, they took a lot of money against Michigan, they took a lot of money against South Florida, and obviously ended up being the winner of both those games. That's why they're here in the Sweet 16. I think that the betting markets look at Ohio as a team. Yeah, they've done what they're capable of doing. Not likely to continue that run here. Not unless that kid Ofoot goes out and hits another 4 3-pointers like he did to beat South Florida yesterday, which was the difference in that ballgame. South Florida didn't hit 3-pointers, and Ohio U did, hence the Bobcats coming away with that. But this number to me, Dave, it speaks volumes about the lack of market respect for the Bobcats in this particular setting.
Other major market story this morning, if you've been away from the news for the past 90 minutes or so, it looks like Peyton Manning has made a decision. He's going to be a Denver Bronco next year. A little bit surprising in some aspects. Denver doesn't have a great receiving core to build around. But from what we've heard, it means so much that he respects the people in the organization. John Elway, John Fox, feels like it's a very, very comfortable fit. It's going to be awfully interesting to see how this flows the next couple of days. Not only Manning, of course, stepping into Denver, but what now happens with Tim Tebow? Will Tim Tebow remain a Bronco? Will they look to deal him? Of course, part of the problem in dealing him, is there any market value for Tim Tebow right now? If you were going to trade him, what could you get?
Maybe a sixth rounder, fifth rounder, you think?
That might be about all. The one thing that would be interesting, because we've talked, you know, people said, oh, they're going to trade Tebow. Keep him. Keep him so that you have that third down package, third and short, you've got the goal line package, but every opponent you play has to spend part of their practice week working on Tebow, whether you're going to use him or not. If I'm Denver, well, I'll keep him.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that, but there is a spot for Tebow to land when we look at Jacksonville. You know, he's going to sell tickets. The Jaguars' number one concern is selling tickets. You know, they had the majority of their games blacked out last year. It's a franchise that, even with new ownership, they haven't opened up the pocketbooks. They haven't been signing these huge deals. They don't have any national fan base. They need and certainly could use a guy like Tim Tebow. on the roster. And considering that Blaine Gabbert, as you know, again, you don't want to throw a guy under the bus after his rookie season, but he wasn't a guy that I was in love with coming out of college. He wasn't a guy that showed me anything last year. If I'm the Jags, that's the first thing I do this morning is find a way to get Tebow on your roster. When we look at Denver, though, yeah, they were a playoff team last year. And as we know, every year in the NFL, about half the teams return to the playoffs and half the teams don't get back the following season. And we all know that Denver, you know, on the lucky side to get to the postseason last year. Offensive line's not great. Receiving core's not great. Running game's not great. They have a pretty good pass rush. They have an okay secondary. Linebacking core's weak. What Manning saw for the Broncos was an organization that he wanted to be a part of, and I think that speaks volumes about what Elway has been able to do in Denver since assuming a greater role with that team. But the bottom line for me, Super Bowl rings for Peyton Manning in Denver, I'll take the under.
Of course, we should just clarify one thing in Jacksonville. They should be glad they had blackouts this year. The fewer people that were able to watch their games, better. Nice little subliminal there, though. Combine Elway and Tebow, you got elbow.
You got an elbow. All right. Like I said earlier, tomorrow we're going to open up the mailbag. So if you have questions, comments, suggestions, send it in. sportsday@covers.com, of course, is the way to reach us. You can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day. You can get involved in the covers.com community, covers.com/posting forum.
Up next, the NBA trade winds were blowing a lot. Last week, a lot of new faces in new uniforms. We're going to break down what it means in the postmortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, guys, we know you've been watching college basketball for several days. Now it's time to put the NBA under the knife. In today's postmortem, the changing faces after the trade winds stopped blowing.
On Friday, we broke down the Golden State-Milwaukee trade and the unique element of having both of those teams immediately go head-to-head, which paid off for the Bucks with an easy win. If you missed charting that one because you spent, about 60 hours watching college basketball over the last 4 days, you definitely want to note the truly unique outing from Monta Ellis against his former team. Milwaukee, a plus 33 during Ellis's 38 minutes and 36 seconds of court time. Now, let's get to the rest of that flurry before the trading deadline and look how it's going to impact the teams over the remainder of the season. We're going to do this in alphabetical order, and let's start in Cleveland.
Got to go alphabetically to have Cleveland at the top of just about any list right now. Okay, they trade Ramon Sessions to the Lakers, pick up Walton Capono and a first-round draft pick. Walton and Capono don't necessarily fit into any plans. It's just the Lakers trimming some roster space. The first-round pick will be worth a little bit something later on, but here's what we believe we're going to see out of Cleveland. A team that, according to the standings, is close to being in that final playoff spot, I don't think they want any part of it. Right now, they don't have a reserve point guard behind Kyrie Irving. They're not going to play him extended minutes on it. They don't want to burn him out. And I don't think they want him in a playoff series yet, especially one that you can't win anyway. But also other experimenting going on. They started Thompson at center yesterday. He's not a center. Almost a small forward in terms of physical stature. Saw Atlanta go out and shoot over 50%, win that game wire to wire. Don't treat Cleveland like one of these contenders trying to get to that number eight spot. Look for the Cavaliers to experiment a little bit, play loosely the rest of that. Byron Scott's under no pressure to win games the rest of the way, and he's probably not going to.
Yeah, the Cavs, a team I think that is, that would ever be every bit as comfortable in the lottery this year, they would be facing off against Miami, perhaps, in the first round. That would be a little bit of a beatdown. And the Cavs also know that teams like the Knicks and Bucks likely to hold on to those final playoff spots in the East. We look at Houston, and they made a couple of deals that, you know, a little bit of a head scratcher for me. We got Hasheem Thabeet, who was, you know, he's been a bust. Let's call it what it is. He's out. Jordan Hill, I'm going to call him a bust, but someone who maybe didn't live up to quite the expectations the Rockets had for him when they took him with a lottery pick a couple years back. Johnny Flynn, another first-round bust who's not done much in his NBA career. Those three guys are out. They bring in Marcus Camby, and the contract of Derek Fisher. Fisher and the Rockets have already negotiated a buyout on that deal. Now, basically, we're talking about bringing in Camby for three young guys who have underperformed. It feels like a veteran stopgap measure. Not that Camby can't play anymore. He can. He's all right for 25 or 30 minutes a game. He's still going to block. He's still going to rebound. Not a great offensive option. But he's tough in the low post, and the Rockets certainly need some low post toughness. Their interior defense has not been all that good. But it's a Houston team right now. I can't figure out exactly what they're trying to do, what they're building for. They're trying to clear some cap space for the future, but I don't know what's the identity of that Rockets team right now. And with so many of their veterans that were, you know, bandied about on the trade deadline, Kyle Lowry in particular, you know, you just don't know what type of team this Houston squad really wants to be.
The one thing we do know, Derek Fisher, no future here. They just signed Courtney Fortson to a 10-day contract from the Developmental League. So he will fill in while Lowry is hurt. But now we get to an interesting team. Let's move to the L.A. Clippers next, because this could be one of these Derek Fisher fits. Yeah, first of all, we start with the fact that the Clippers got Nick Young because they needed a number two. Just probably not this number two. Yeah, Young brings more size than they have at the position, brings a little bit of scoring potential, but defense, rebounding, team chemistry, all that. This has not been part of Nick Young's game in the past. In fact, his first Clipper game, 1-for-6 over 28 minutes and 30 seconds, no rebounds, one assist, as they just barely got by the Pistons yesterday. But now, could this be one of these spots where maybe Derek Fisher can step in a little bit, give you a little bit of veteran leadership, someone who might be able to tutor or mentor a guy like Nick Young so that Chris Paul doesn't have to do it? For now, the Nick Young thing, it's a little bit of an upgrade for the Clippers, because at least now when you've got a guard, Kobe Bryant and some of these other number twos come playoff time, you've got a little more size there. Problem is, even though Young has the size, that doesn't mean he can guard them anyway.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, I watched a little bit of that Clippers game yesterday, and Young, he didn't really know the offense. He missed a big dunk. He wasn't particularly in the flow, and yet he's on the floor for well over 20 minutes in that contest. So he's someone that the Clips desperately needed. We've been talking about the Clips needing someone to play the two spot ever since Chauncey Billups got hurt, and Young, he fits there. I think he makes the Clippers at least a little bit better, in theory. Now let's move over to the other team that plays in the Staples Center. Of course, that being the L.A. Lakers, who brought in Ramon Sessions from Cleveland, brought in Jordan Hill from Houston, gave away Luke Walton and Jason Capono, a couple of guys who have had decent contributions in the past, but really haven't done much with this year's Lakers team. And, you know, Sessions, he's played well in a secondary role. He's someone who the Lakers desperately needed. They needed some quickness at the point. They needed some defensive acumen at the point. And Sessions, in theory, should bring those. But he's never been the guy. And now sharing minutes with Steve Blake, but you have to think that Mike Brown likely to play Sessions during crunch time of these games against the better point guards the Lakers are going to face. And you just don't know if Ramon Sessions is going to be capable of stepping up and giving L.A. what they need on both ends of the floor in those key late-game situations.
Yeah, Sessions is one of these guys who good for 20 minutes, average for 25, weak for 30. You know, the more he's on the court, the more he can get exposed a little bit. You didn't see the Lakers play yesterday. 24 turnovers against Utah. Now, still dead bottom in the league at -3.3 net turnovers per game. There's no one else in the NBA even within one of that. 2.2 is the next worst. Can they get that turned around? Sessions was probably the best available point guard that they could find, but probably not good enough. Major changes, though, in Portland. Nate McMillan out, sort of had to be, even though McMillan is a decent guy, the team had just flat out given up last week. A lot of changes in the roster, as Teddy already mentioned. Marcus Camby's gone, Gerald Wallace is out. Coming in, Mehmet Okur, if or when he gets healthy again. Shawnee Williams, Hasheem Thabeet, Johnny Flynn. Maybe none of those guys would even be with the Trailblazers next year. So sort of looking to start from scratch and maybe start all over again. Now, we don't want to measure the team here, but also the coaching change. It's Caleb Canales taking over as the head man. He was their film guy 5 years ago. So I first got his start. So it's been a quick move up the chain. First thing he said is, look, we need to run more. We need to be able to create and generate offense because our half court tends to bog down. Yeah, they tried to run with Oklahoma City last night. You saw how that worked out. Gave up a lot of points, at least 26 points in every quarter. Thunder shot almost 55% for that game. Portland, again, another team that is close to a playoff spot. But how bad do these guys really want it? That's going to be a question.
Yeah, this was my single most disappointing team at the trading deadline because, as you know, if you've been watching the show, if you're a client, you know that the fading the Blazers has been my number one NBA priority over the course of the last few weeks, and we're able to make a lot of scratch betting against Portland as the betting markets looked at them as, oh, this team's in playoff contention. But if you watch them play, you knew that wasn't a realistic possibility for a team that played very well in December and early January and had been on a steady downhill slide ever since that time. Now it's clear. They're a lottery team. And you know, Dave was saying he doesn't know if any of those guys that they acquired will be here next year. I'll take the under on the four guys they acquired, whatever number you give me. I'll take an under a half in terms of contributions they're going to get from these guys this year and in terms of anyone that's going to be on the roster next year. Looks like a complete rebuilding job in Portland. I don't know if we're going to call them Charlotte. You know, I don't know if you want to call them New Orleans. But whatever record you see for the Blazers right now, that's not realistically assessing where this team is. And we talk about Canales getting the head coaching job. The other NBA head coach who started out as a video coordinator less than a decade ago, some guy named Spoelstra down in Miami. Maybe that's a path to success in the NBA coaching career. Carousel, I should say. Let's look at the Washington Wizards now. The Wizards picked up a big man in Nene, and of course Brian Cook in the Nick Young deal. Nick Young, JaVale McGee, out the door for Washington. They couldn't deal Andre Blaschner as much as they tried to, but they'll try to move him again around the draft. And an interesting connection between John Wall, the Wizards' point guard of the future, the guy they're building their roster around, and Nene, the guy they picked up from Denver, the big man who has you know, battled testicular cancer, battled all kinds of injuries, and has come out on the other end looking pretty darn good. But he's got a fat contract, and his agent, the same agent as John Wall. Maybe those two guys will be looked to be building blocks for Washington as they look to get out of the lottery where they've been perpetually for the course of the last decade.
Now here's actually the interesting team to watch. You get rid of a couple of guys, bad chemistry, bad clubhouse, bad ethics on the floor. Andre Blatch also only played 5 minutes last night. So what happens the first time you have all three of those guys nowhere to be found? Look at the defense and how they scrapped against Memphis. They held Memphis to 40% shooting. They had 11 steals. They were right in that game. Actually made a rally in the fourth quarter and were right in the hunt there. Washington might be an interesting team to watch because now these guys will work hard. They're probably glad some of these other players aren't on the court anymore. It's easy to hustle when you know the guy next to you will also hustle. You don't break your back playing defense when you know the guy next to you isn't going to. Couldn't get to the Wizards last night. But it's possible in the days and weeks ahead, the Wizards might be one of the interesting value teams in the NBA.
Coming up next, we're going to head to the Monday night NBA board as Money Time begins.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name of my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream, be there.
All right, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Charlotte, North Carolina, where the Philadelphia 76ers, about a 9-point favorite over the Bobcats. And we've seen this Sixer team, you know, they had an 18-7 record the first 25 games. Their last 20, about 7 and I think 6 and 14, I should say, straight up, even worse than that, ATS. So a pretty big champ. Sorry, no, it's 7 and 13 straight up, 6 and 14 against the spread for Philly in their last 20. So the hot start, the cool last 6 weeks or so. Much of that, however, appears to be schedule related. Philadelphia has not stepped up in class well at any point this season. And, of course, we've talked about it on the show repeatedly. They've struggled in these, quote-unquote, close encounter type of games where the spread is from plus 4 to minus 4, the games where they and their opponents are relatively competitive. They've lost 3 straight coming into this one, all against playoff teams, but 3 straight losses for the Sixers. And you start to say, well, has Philly got some big problems? Maybe not. Spencer Hawes back in the lineup for the Sixers the last couple of games. He's working his way back into playing shape. And Philly against bottom feeders, boy, they have been absolutely as bad as they've been in the close encounter types games. They've been very, very good against the weaklings. Since the All-Star break, favorites of minus 6 or more, 3-0 straight up, 3-0 against the spread. You look at their long-term run this year in this role as big chalk. Well, favorites of 6 or more, how about 17-2 straight up, 15-4 against the spread. You know, Philly, they're the type of team that has taken care of business against squads like Charlotte. And the market may not fully understand this nuance with the 76ers because the markets like teams with superstars in the NBA. Philly doesn't have superstars. They don't have great offensive players. They play defense. They got a coach who's really good with X's and O's, and that's helped the Sixers a lot in these type of contexts.
But nothing easier in the NBA this year than fading Philadelphia in close settings and backing them when they're big favorites. Because as Teddy said, it does correlate. They don't have the superstars to close out those games against good teams. But what the markets don't see is the precision that this team plays with under Doug Collins. These pieces fit at this particular level. Number one in the NBA on our best defensive ratings by a wide margin now. We talk about points per 100 possessions. 1.4 points better than anybody else. But you know what? They're the best in the NBA at a whole lot of things. Let's take a look at just where this Philadelphia success comes from. When they step down in class, look at how well they play the sport. Number one, as we said, in total defense. Also number one in defensive field goal percentage allowed. So there's a combination that they go out and they get steals. They don't give you open shots. Number one in fewest assists allowed. Number one offensively for the fewest turnovers. And number one for turnover margin. When you're leading the entire NBA in all of those categories, that's how good your X's and O's are. You're playing with an awful lot of polish. So when do you want to back the Sixers? When that polish can overcome a team that doesn't bring that same level of execution. Maybe like tonight.
Yeah, you say the Bobcats and level of execution, I don't know. Charlotte has not been a good team, but they certainly played better lately. No question about it. Charlotte 6-3 against the number in their last 9 ball games. They've been a value team during this span. Recent wins. They're able to rally back from 15 down to beat Toronto in their last game. They knocked off New Orleans on the road last week. So no question the Bobcats have played some better basketball, certainly from both a straight-up and point-spread perspective, but could be a big injury absence for Charlotte tonight. And Charlotte didn't have a lot of impact players, but Corey Maggette's one of them. Maggette is their go-to guy on offense, their leading scorer. He's the guy that can get to the free-throw line, which is the best way that Charlotte can score. As of this moment, Maggette still listed as questionable slash doubtful. It doesn't look particularly likely he's going to be able to suit up tonight with a lingering back issue.
Let's head out to Denver. Well, right now the Nuggets, a 4-point favorite over Dallas. We're going to put Denver in the postmortem because of the personnel adjustments they've got. But figure, no, let's talk about this game and figure out the best way to put it into perspective. Nene is gone. They add JaVale McGee. Okay, now McGee was a bit of a malcontent in Washington. Had a lot of problems there, but here's something he brings that Nene didn't do. He's a shot blocker. Averages 3 times more blocks per 48 minutes than Nene does. That's a big component that Denver had been missing inside. And guess who's back on the court now also? Wilson Chandler. Finally signed him yesterday. He's back from China, where actually had a pretty good season over there. There are an awful lot of pieces for George Karl to fit together. If you look at them in the best light, there's a big upside here. Question is, can they make it all happen? This is one we're going to watch very, very closely just to see how some of these components can fit.
Yeah, I mean, the upside for Denver, in my mind, is the Western Conference title. You know, I think that team has that type of potential if they can put all the pieces together in a matter of 20 games, which not going to be easy, obviously, making a trade like this at the deadline. All the injuries and guys coming into that will line up all year long. But when it comes to depth, when it comes to offensive explosiveness, aren't a lot of teams that can score points the way that Denver can. And McGee brings something of a defensive presence in the paint when it comes to shot blocking that I think George Karl felt the team sorely lacked. Of course, the big challenge is going to be to get these pieces to fit in a short time frame. And, of course, to get a veteran team content with minutes. Because let's not forget, while Denver has great depth, that also means a lot of guys not getting the minutes and floor time that they're used to. And sometimes veterans aren't happy in that situation when guys aren't finishing. Let's take a look at George Karl's quote talking about what the depth means to the Denver Nuggets right about now. Karl says, "Would you bet me $1,000? Nice, George. I'd love to bet you $1,000 on anything, subject to your choice."
You don't want to bet George.
All right.
No, George is tough, especially this prop.
Not this prop.
No,
exactly.
George is tough.
"Would you bet me $1,000 that tonight you knew the five guys who will finish the game? It can be advantageous to us if we commit to 22 games and don't get egos and don't worry about minutes and get flustered about not playing. I agree with Karl wholeheartedly. If, that is a big if. You know, it also means that opposing teams are likely to have a very difficult time preparing for facing Denver. Lots of different lineups, lots of different options for the Nuggets. But it also provides some difficulty for the handicapper. Difficulty both in terms of previewing Denver games and in reviewing them after they're done. We have to carefully project how they match up against each opponent and to make sure that to file the results into the proper category."
For tonight, it's going to be a little bit difficult for Dallas. Looks like no Sean Marion. Looks like no Brendan Haywood. That's tough when you're shorthanded and you're going to play at altitude against Denver. Keep in mind, this total is over 200. In a fast-paced game, the fewer bodies you have, the tougher it's going to be to hang in. And hanging in has been a real headache for the Mavericks on the road. Now, if you go back to the Nowitzki-Kidd era, they've been the single best road dog in the NBA. That's falling down right now. Since the All-Star break, 0-6 straight up, 1-5 straight up on the road, losing to the spread by 58.5 points in those six games. It means the odds makers have missed the projection almost 10 full points per game. Dallas looks a little vulnerable here. Question is, and we got to decide this before tip-off, can we trust Denver to have the chemistry to lay that four?
When we come back, the teams that are still alive in the NIT... Yeah, they could smell it. A trip to Madison Square Garden. We expect good, intense basketball and NIT action tonight. Dave and I are going to break it down in Money Time coming up next.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee, where we have an in-state rivalry. Not so much of an in-state rivalry. It's been a pretty one-sided series. But Middle Tennessee and Tennessee battle tonight in Knoxville. Right now, the Vols, about a 4.5-point home favorite over the Blue Raiders. And, you know, Middle Tennessee, they've been annihilated. Annihilated in every recent meeting between these two teams. There have been five meetings since 2006. Tennessee's won all five, and listen to these margins. They won by 30, 21, 10, 69, and 31. This year's Middle Tennessee State, much better than any recent version of the Blue Raiders. This team can play. We saw that right from the opening weekend of the season when they went out to UCLA and beat the Bruins by 20, and it continued. Hung tough on the road at Vanderbilt. Won against Ole Miss on a neutral floor. No question. We saw them kind of stumble a little bit down the stretch, but by and large, this team was the class of the Sun Belt for a good portion of the season. And they've got some talent. Certainly, we talk about Iowa State transfer LaRon Dendy. He was a Sun Belt Player of the Year, almost 15 points and more than 7 boards per game. You look at Middle Tennessee, if bottom line, in these matchups, even against Vandy, you know, hold the Commodores under 40% shooting. They won the boards in that game. And the assist-to-turnover ratio has been real good for Middle Tennessee all year. They're going to attack aggressively. They're going to try to win this game. We saw at Vanderbilt, you know, when they lost, and again, the last 30 seconds of that game was fouls and a very fortuitous final shot for the Blue Raiders if you had them in your pocket that day. But the bottom line was they tried to push the tempo. They weren't trying to slow it down against against a team that's better than they are. They were very comfortable running their up-tempo offense, and I would expect to see more of the same tonight against the Vols.
So an interesting total aspect in this game. Tennessee is going to get Jahron Maymann back. Yeah, second team, all-SEC, scores 12.5 points a game, good on the boards. He didn't play in that opener against Savannah State when they were very sluggish on the court. So Teddy had mentioned, you know, Middle Tennessee is good enough to attack Tennessee. We might be seeing something interesting from the Tennessee side of this equation in terms of tempo. Quanza Martin was not happy with the way that his team played against Savannah State, very lethargic on offense. So what have they done? Let's let him tell us what they've done in practice this week. Change the pace a little bit. He said, we used a 24-second shot clock, getting up and down the court, being aggressive, running, and really pushing the ball. It's more for us as opposed to Middle Tennessee. Even though they're big guys, do a great job of running the floor. With Maymann back, could we see Tennessee maybe being a little bit looser and a little bit more aggressive on offense? Maybe a little total that we can look to a bit.
Yeah, and there's maybe a subtle issue here in terms of the Tennessee home court. You know, this is a team, they averaged more than 17,000 fans per season. On senior day, the regular season finale, 23,000 screaming fans. Well, they sold 6,000 for their NIT opener. And for this ball game, they posted an advisory on their website for fans to buy tickets online and print them out because they're expecting a lot of kids and grown-ups from Murfreesboro to make the drive up to Knoxville, and a lot of walk-up sales for Middle Tennessee for this ball game. So not the home court advantage that the Vols normally enjoy.
Let's go out to Palo Alto for tonight's nightcap. This is on ESPNU Stanford, now an 8.5-point favorite over Illinois State. No issue with Illinois State fans coming in to buy up tickets. Probably not many Stanford fans buying them anyway, but money coming to Stanford. This game has moved about a full point from the opener. People apparently not that impressed with Illinois State's win at Ole Miss. It's a fascinating game to break down. We talked about last week on the show how so many of the early tournament games, that first round, had over money coming in. Literally every game on the board in those three minor tournaments, big over money last Tuesday and Wednesday. One of the most dramatic of all. Look at the Illinois State win at Mississippi, 96-93 in overtime. Think, wow, it must have been real loose. They must have been running up and down the court. Yet when we break that game down, it's a whole different story. In that game, 51 field goal attempts for Illinois State, 23 free throw attempts. How do you almost score 100 out of that?
Well, I mean, one of the best single game efficiency charts a team will ever produce. Again, 51 field goal attempts, 23 free throws. It's actually fairly slow for an overtime game. Remember, they got those extra 5 minutes against the Rebels. But Illinois State, for the contest, 17 of 23 from three-point range. Nick Moore and Tyler Brown combined for a true night for the ages. Look at the numbers. Triples at Ole Miss for Moore and Brown. Well, they hit 14 out of 15 in that ball game. All other games combined, 111 out of 289, so from 38% normally to 93% against the Rebels. That's why Illinois State was able to survive in advance and head out to Stanford. So 50 points between those two on just 19 field goal attempts and 5 free throw attempts, that's not going to happen very often. Brown, again, 10 field goal attempts, didn't get to the charity stripe, and still managed to score 26 points. It might be a while before you see another college player, or NBA player for that matter, get that many points off of that few shot attempts.
Shows you the shifting marketplace. 10 years ago, this opener, 7.5, gets bet down. Wow, you won straight up at Ole Miss. Look at that scoreboard. You must be good. Instead, it goes the other way. Similar to these big turnover games in football. where the markets now bet differently than they used to. The markets now see that shooting and say, you know what, you're not that good. You shot too well. We're going to look to play against you the next time around. Not sure if we want Stanford laying points on a good free throw shooting team. They don't always get out of their own way on offense. But notice how things change, as Teddy said, when you can start to smell Madison Square Garden, defense picks up. And all those three-point shots that Mississippi was not prepared for last week, because you can imagine how much film they studied of Illinois State. Well, now Stanford has had a lot of time to study film. When you look at all the different defensive components, holding your field goal percentages down, getting turnovers, Stanford checked in at number 25 in the nation on our best defensive ratings. Yeah, Stanford may D up pretty well. The Illinois State shots might not fall the way they did last week. Just don't know if we can lay this kind of wood with this team. But there is one other team out there tonight that we can lay wood with.
Oh, yeah. It's a game we talked about a little bit earlier. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Charlotte Bobcats, a Sixers team that has taken care of business in this role all year long. It doesn't look like Charlotte's going to have their best scorer. We're going to lay it on the road with Philly. Philadelphia -9, the Vegas Sports Day, a play of the day. And even though the 9's starting to get bought out, 9.5, I think that's still reasonable. Anything less than double digits for the Sixers, that's a buy sign for me. So Philly minus the points as the play of the day. That's going to wrap it up for the Monday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. From Alinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the game and good luck. We'll see you again tomorrow.